It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 26 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. At the airport, they are registering northwest winds to 7 miles per hour, 57% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for scattered snow showers after 4 this afternoon, mostly cloudy skies to continue with a high near 28, north winds to 15. Scattered snow showers tonight until 10, then a chance of snow after that. Mostly cloudy overnight, too, with a low around 21, northwest winds to 15, gusting to 20. Coming up on the Midday Report, those hurricane-force winds that hit Kodiak earlier this month were pretty tough on St. Herman Harbor, which is in pretty tough shape anyway. News about Kodiak Crab Festival.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Justice Department has opened an investigation into the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. NPR's Bobby Allen reports federal investigators are expected to examine what events led to the largest bank failure since the 2008 financial crisis.
Justice Department lawyers are beginning to pore over who knew what when ahead of the implosion of Silicon Valley Bank. That's according to a person with direct knowledge of the probe. While details remain unclear, legal experts say there will be a hard look at how a company executive sold $3.6 million worth of stock 2 weeks before the bank went insolvent. No company officials have been accused of any wrongdoing, but President Biden says his administration will get to the bottom of who was responsible for the collapse. Treasury officials announced that all of the bank's $175 billion in deposits would be backstopped using a giant insurance fund paid for by fees on big banks. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
The Federal Aviation Administration plans to hold a summit tomorrow with airports, airlines, and other central players in aviation safety following a series of inexplicable close calls on U.S. runways this year. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says the uptick in recent weeks is deeply troubling.
Air travel right now is safer than any other mode of transportation. Statistically, safer than walking across the street. But it's not going to stay that way unless we are relentlessly focused on everything we can learn from everything that happens to the system.
Southwest Airlines is still taking heat for widespread flight delays and cancellations during the holiday season in December. Today, CEO Robert Jordan blamed the disruptions on extremely cold weather, not a failure to invest more on crew scheduling technology. Bad weather is piling on travel disruptions in the U.S. The flight tracking website FlightAware reports more than 1,000 cancellations in this country. In the Northeast, Boston and New York City area airports reportedly are seeing the highest number of canceled flights in the region. The U.S. military says a Russian fighter plane clipped the propeller of a U.S. drone, forcing it to crash in the Black Sea. NPR's Greg Myrie reports this marks one of the most serious incidents yet involving U.S. and Russian militaries in the volatile region around Ukraine.
The U.S. military says two Russian fighter jets carried out a, quote, reckless intercept of the American Reaper drone, which was flying in international airspace over the Black Sea. The Russian jets initially flew in front of the American drone several times and dumped fuel on it. Eventually, the military said, one of the Russian planes hit the propeller of the drone, causing it to crash. The U.S. called this part of a pattern of dangerous actions by Russian pilots. The U.S. military has not been directly involved in the war in Ukraine, but the Air Force carries out constant surveillance flights over nearby countries and in international airspace. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Hurricane-force winds that hit Kodiak earlier this month delayed food deliveries and disrupted travel to the island. The windstorm also ripped out pieces of the city's biggest boat harbor, As KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, city officials say the damage highlights the need for repairs.
At last week's City Council work session, Harbor Master Dave Johnson detailed how a windstorm damaged Kodiak's St. Herman Harbor earlier this month.
In that windstorm, we did lose 7 finger floats. So I think that answers the question of how critical it is that we get St. Herman Harbor rebuilt.
Finger floats are the smaller sections of dock in between vessels where they tie up. The city had previously been losing about 1 finger float a year, according to Johnson. St. Herman Harbor is the largest of the city's 2 boat harbors. It's where the biggest vessels in Kodiak's commercial fleet tie up. The harbor is 40 years old, and in some areas, its infrastructure is literally crumbling. The city says an overhaul of St. Herman Harbor is the top priority on its list of capital improvement projects for this fiscal year. Johnson told council members that in the days after the windstorm, a diver was sent down to remove a corroded piling that had partially collapsed. He anticipated it would take almost a full day to remove it.
When the diver got on site, they rocked the broken piling back and forth for about 30 seconds, and it broke off at the water at the ground line. So it just shows how degraded that piling was, and that's kind of the condition of the entire harbor over there.
Johnson told council members that the destruction caused by the windstorm, which produced gusts of up to 80 miles per hour, proves that critical repairs need to happen soon. Details about the windstorm damage was part of a larger conversation about the city's draft waterfront master plan, which has been in the works for almost a year and was released by the city this month. The nearly 50-page document lays out improvements to the entire city-owned coastline. Council members agreed that it was a nice long-term vision, but any waterfront development needs to start with a replacement of St. Herman Harbor. Deputy City Manager Josie Benke said that's the city's main focus going forward.
I can't express strongly enough that we are focused on the immediate needs of the harbor.
The project won't be cheap. It's expected to cost $56 million to replace the harbor's existing infrastructure and expand its overall vessel capacity. But the city and Kodiak Island Borough are both requesting funding for the project. The city is in the process of applying for grants. Johnson says he hopes to start work next year. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
The Kodiak Crab Festival, also referred to as Crab Fest, will once again have no rides as part of this year's celebration. The Kodiak Chamber of Commerce said in a press release over the weekend that Golden Wheel Amusements, a Chugiak-based roller coaster company, was booked elsewhere that weekend. Other carnival companies cited a limited ferry schedule as their reason for not being part of Crab Fest. The Kennecott, one of 2 Alaska Marine Highway System ferries that services Kodiak, will not be in service this year due to staffing issues. This isn't the first time Crab Fest hasn't had rides. The festival had issues bringing rides to Kodiak last year as well, with issues with rides dating back as early as 2014. In its release, the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce encouraged the public to reach out to their representatives and to the Alaska Marine Highway System to express concerns and demand more consistent ferry service in the future. The only Cook Inlet beluga whale in captivity is celebrating 5 years at his aquarium home. KDLL's Riley Board has this update on Tyonek, named after the closest community where he was rescued, who first lived at the Alaska Sea Life Center in Seward before transferring to his permanent home at SeaWorld San Antonio.
In 2017, the pilot of an Alaska State Trooper helicopter spotted a stranded beluga calf from the air on a mudflat near Trading Bay on the west side of Cook Inlet. The pilot was out looking for another dead whale that had been reported on the west side when he spotted the calf.
He was flying and he saw what he thought was a dead baby beluga, so he knew we would be very interested in a dead animal, and that's what it looked like from the air.
That's Barbara Mahoney, a biologist with NOAA Fisheries who worked on the rescue. She says the pilot landed, realized the calf was alive but abandoned, and contacted NOAA Fisheries. The team quickly realized Tyonek would need to remain in captivity. He was too weak and young to survive on his own. He was brought first to Anchorage, then to the Sea Life Center in Seward.
Even with the health challenges, I mean, they rallied, he rallied, and after a couple months, we realized that it looked like he was over the hump for the most part. And NOAA did evaluation and realized that this animal couldn't be rehabilitated and released back to the wild.
Cook Inlet beluga whales are genetically distinct and highly endangered. There are roughly 270 that inhabit the waterway today. Tionic was the first rehabilitated Cook Inlet beluga calf and remains the only Cook Inlet beluga in captivity. Beyond caring for the animal, researchers also appreciated the opportunity to study a member of the species.
Caring for stranded animals isn't just about caring for stranded animals. It's an opportunity to learn about the species and the pressures going on in the population in the wild. We have definitely learned a lot from him.
In an episode of Indie Alaska made in those first few months when Tionic lived at the Sea Life Center, Dr. Carrie Gertz explains that the center was able to conduct the first ever hearing tests on a Cook Inlet beluga.
This is the first beluga from Cook Inlet that we've been able to do a hearing test on. But it's also important for the greater population, for scientists and resource managers, because one of the concerns of what might be a pressure to the Cook Inlet beluga whales is their ability to hear in what's a very noisy environment.
After 4 months in Seward, NOAA selected SeaWorld San Antonio as Tionic's permanent home because the facility had adult female belugas and young male calves, which would be important for his development. In San Antonio, Tionic bonded with a Pacific white-sided dolphin named Betty, and they remained companions until her death last year. Mahoney says Tionic's 5-year anniversary is significant, as were all his previous milestones.
I think they've done a wonderful job with keeping this animal healthy, physically, socially.
She says the public can play a critical role in finding stranded belugas like Tionic. She says if you see a stranded, entangled, injured, or dead marine mammal, call the NOAA Fisheries Alaska Statewide 24-Hour Stranding Hotline at 877-925-7773. On the Kenai Peninsula, I'm Riley Board.
There is a nondescript office in Juneau where a team of self-described weather nerds work to predict the future. But in southeast Alaska, they're up against some major challenges. KTOO's Anna Canny has more.
Weather forecasting is notoriously hard to get right. No one knows that better than National Weather Service meteorologist Grant Smith.
I remember this very vividly because it was like at this moment, I just like, all right, I give up. It was one time I was standing at my house looking outside, and it was 34 and rainy. And I was just drinking my coffee. Later that afternoon, it was 38 and snowing. And I was like, what is this? It's just a moving target.
Smith came to the Weather Service office in Juneau after working as a TV meteorologist in South Dakota. He says forecasting there was a little more straightforward.
South Dakota is mostly flat. Just because it's flatter, the range of possibilities is much smaller. And so it's just, in a sense, easier to forecast.
The basic components of weather forecasts are the same no matter where you are. It starts with radar and satellite imagery that show the basics of incoming weather systems, things like what direction a front is traveling and how much precipitation it's bringing. Then weather models bring out the finer details. They basically run simple atmospheric data through equations that predict things like wind speed, dew point, and temperature. And those tools work really well in some regions. But in a place like Southeast Alaska, things are more complicated.
Ours is a lot more intricate in knowing, needing to know these tiny little details and microclimates that we have to deal with.
Basically, what's happening in the atmosphere doesn't always give a clear picture of what's happening on the ground. Weather systems interact with the terrain. And the many mountains and waterways of Southeast Alaska make things hard. Take Hoonah and Gustavus. They're fairly close to each other, but the same wind pattern can cause very different weather in each place.
So you have a north wind. So north wind for Gustavus is coming off of land, probably going to be cold, probably going to be snow. But a north wind over Hoonah is coming off of water, rain, snow mix, or rain.
Those differences define microclimates in Southeast. They're small areas where the climate patterns differ from the rest of the region, and even Juneau has a handful of distinct microclimates. On a winter day, storm clouds coming in off the ocean can hit Douglas Island and dump rain in downtown Juneau. But if you drive out to the valley, in the shadow of Mendenhall Glacier, you might encounter fresh white snow instead. Meteorologist Nicole Farron says the models predict weather conditions for areas that are just 3 square kilometers. But even in that small grid, Juneau's terrain can change from land to ocean to high mountain peaks.
Majority of this box is a mountain, and the models think that that is a mountain point. They don't know that
Home Depot's right there. But I do.
So on the forecast map, she'll edit weather conditions by hand. It's not just microclimates. Southeast Alaska is also a huge region.
Our area is about the size of Florida, and Florida has 6 or 7 offices, and we have 1.
And not all the meteorologists have a chance to visit the many small communities they forecast for. So they turn to the people that live there.
People that are weather nerds like the rest of us here in the building, and they like weather, so they report on it.
They can tell meteorologists what will happen on the ground when a weather system moves over the land. If a front passes over Gustavus, for instance, local observers have an idea of what's going to happen in Juneau. In most cases, forecasters make their decision with an abundance of caution, especially when making storm advisories and warnings. They make the forecast for safety purposes, so they're bound to overpredict. But Smith says an accurate forecast in a place like Southeast is a unique rush.
It makes it kind of more of a challenge and more fun when you can nail it and when you get it right.
And he says the people of Southeast are uniquely forgiving, too. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
A Reddington is poised to win the Iditarod. This is coverage of the Iditarod on Alaska Public Media. I'm Casey Grove. Ryan Reddington is expected to win the 2023 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race sometime this morning. The 40-year-old musher left White Mountain at 12:15 a.m. for the final 77-mile run to Nome. He held a comfortable lead of more than 4 hours over his closest competitor, 2019 winner Pete Kaiser. At the White Mountain checkpoint yesterday, an exhausted Reddington said he was proud to be in a position to secure his first Iditarod championship.
It hasn't sunk in yet, but boy, does that sound really good.
Reddington's lead grew yesterday when Kaiser banked more than 5 hours of rest at an earlier checkpoint in Elam. Kaiser said he realized he could not catch up to Reddington, so he opted for the extended stop. He reasoned that if something unexpected happened to Reddington's team on the notoriously unpredictable coast, his team would be ready to take the lead.
Definitely too far behind to beat him with raw ground speed, but yeah, you know, if something happened, then we're here.
ANIAC's Richie Deal is running right behind Kaiser. Deal said there is no formula for beating his friend on the coast, but he says he's ready to race.
It's just all about, you know, what you have and the confidence you have in him, and I have a lot of confidence in him.
All three top mushers are Alaska native and also friends. A first-place finisher is expected in Nome later this morning. As the three mushers make their final push, Alaska Public Media's Ben Matheson brings us more from White Mountain, where the teams rested side by side yesterday and reflected on how they held on at the front of the pack.
Church bells welcomed Ryan Reddington and his 8 dogs to White Mountain Monday afternoon. Reddington immediately bedded down his dogs on straw after a roughly 90-mile run from Koyuk, pausing only in Elam for 13 minutes on the way. All teams must stop for 8 hours at White Mountain before their final push to Nome. Reddington was happy for the break.
I'm really tired and my legs are cramping a little bit, so I'm really excited for the rest here, the 8 hours. And
Reddington was starting to realize that he's in position to win his first Iditarod.
Trying not to think about it too much, but we got a huge lead, but we still got 77 miles to go.
That lead grew Monday when Reddington's closest competitor, Pete Kaiser, took an extended break in Elam. Kaiser said he had 2 distinct plans as he approached the checkpoint.
Plan A, if the team looked strong, was to go through. Plan B, if they needed a rest, was to stay there. So it was like a 50-50. I mean, out of all the Iditarods I've done, I think I've pulled that off probably 5 or 6 times. So it's not, you kind of have to have all your ducks in a row. Everything's got to be just right to do that.
Kaiser chose Plan B.
I felt like they needed a little extra rest and just kind of took that chance and said, you know, I'm going to back off chasing Ryan for now and give them the rest they need.
The tightest race on the podium may be for second place. Kaiser holds a razor-thin margin over Richie Deal, who's on track for a career-best finish. Deal says he's having fun as he eyes a top-3 placing in his 11th Iditarod.
Competing at this level, to me anyway, I don't know. I enjoy it. It's a riot. I have a lot of fun doing it. I mean, this is why I race.
This year's Iditarod had a big shakeup in its second half when reigning champion Brent Sass, who had been leading much of the race, dropped out, citing a bad cold and 3 cracked teeth. Then Jesse Holmes, another early race leader, saw his team start to slow down. Reddington saw his opening and made a run for it, with Kaiser and Deal close behind. Reddington got further ahead by making 2 marathon runs, going nonstop while his rivals broke the trail into smaller sections. Before this year, Reddington's best finish was 7th in 2021. This race has been generations in the making for him. Reddington's grandfather, Joe Reddington Sr., is considered one of the founders of the Iditarod. His father, Ramey, has completed several Iditarods and is among the six Reddingtons in the extended family listed in the Iditarod archives. Ryan Reddington said he would be proud to be the first of his family to win.
It'd be a really cool honor and be a really good thing for the race in Alaska and for my family, and pretty major event Grandpa started here.
And if Reddington finishes in first place, he'll get the distinct honor of winning a trophy that was named for his grandfather. In White Mountain, I'm Ben Matheson.
A total of 30 teams remain in this year's Iditarod, spread out over about 250 miles of trail back to rookie musher Jed Stevenson. We'll have more race coverage throughout the day at alaskapublic.org, including photos, more stories, and sled dog profiles. You can also sign up for our special Iditarod newsletter and find our Iditapod podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Casey Grove, and this is Iditarod coverage on Alaska Public Media.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
And this just in, Ryan Reddington has won this year's Iditarod. That just came in over the wires. Ryan Reddington, your new Iditarod champion.
Inflation is down, but not out. I'm Nova Sapo with a Marketplace Minute. Prices last month rose by their slowest annual pace since late 2021. The government reported a 6% gain for the consumer price index. Still too high, housing costs were among the biggest monthly gainers. Investors are betting on a quarter point interest rate hike next week when Federal Reserve policymakers meet. That's indicated by trading in certain contracts tied to the Fed's key rate. Investors are considering inflation, recent jobs data, and pressures on regional banks, in part caused by quickly rising interest rates. Moody's is reviewing its debt ratings of six regional banks. They include First Republic, Western Alliance, and Comerica. A downgrade would make borrowing more expensive for those banks. I'm Nova Sapo with a Marketplace Minute.
It's a tough time, but each of us can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. All you have to do is give via Pick, Click, Give by supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD. You aren't just donating. You're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. You're changing the lives of Alaskans with the click of a button. Don't forget to Pick, Click, Give when you fill out your PFD application this year.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 14th day of March, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 8:28. It will set again at 8:10. That will give us 11 hours and 42 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 5 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 50 degrees, set in 2005. No way we're going to reach that today. And our record low was minus 3, set in chilly 1971. Currently 26 degrees here in Kodiak under mostly cloudy skies. Not much wind, though. Northwest to 7 at the airport right now, where they also have 57% humidity and 10 miles of visibility. Taking a look at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up. That will happen at 1:50 this afternoon here on the east side and be 9/10 of a foot, followed by a high tide at 8:17 p.m. of 5 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will occur at 2:06 this afternoon and be 1.3 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 8:34 p.m. of 9.3 feet. KMXT is supported by North Rim Bank, expanding its services with the opening of its new Kodiak Financial Center at 2695 Mill Bay Road. More information is available at northrim.com. Mariners, be aware, here is your weather for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory tonight and Wednesday. Northwest 15, becoming northeast this afternoon, except northwest 20 north of Dangerous Cape. Seas to 4 feet with freezing spray today. For tonight, north 25, seas 5 feet with freezing spray. And for tomorrow, on our east side, north 25, diminishing to 15 in the afternoon, seas 5 feet with freezing spray in the morning tomorrow. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tomorrow, northwest 20, becoming northeast 25 this afternoon, 5-foot seas building to 10 feet at the north end of the strait in the afternoon, with freezing spray today in the Shelikof as well. For tonight, northwest winds to 15 knots, except north 25 at the north end of the strait, seas 5 feet, except 10-foot seas at the north end of the strait. Freezing spray tonight in the Shelikof as well. And north 25 tomorrow, seas to 8 feet with freezing spray on our west side. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a special meeting tonight. That will happen at 7:30 p.m. and be held in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. The meeting is open to the public, and public members are also encouraged to web stream the meeting. The web streaming link and the meeting packet is available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you wish to request printed meeting materials or have any questions about the meeting, contact the City Clerk's office at 907-486-8636. And today is one of the rare days where the AARP tax aid volunteers will be helping people in the afternoon. Today from 1 to 4 p.m. you can bring in your taxes in to them. And they're doing free tax preparation and e-filing for simple tax returns. It does require two visits, but one of them could be this afternoon. For the first visit, they get all your information. The second, they review and file the actual return. So again, that's from 1 to 4 p.m. today, and you want to go to Kodiak Job Service, check in at room 110. That's down at 211 Mission Road downtown. Bring your Social Security cards or documentation and picture ID for the taxpayer. And don't forget your W-2s and other income information and tax information documents. Meetings going on in the Kodiak Island Borough include Wednesday's meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission. That's happening in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, the Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Friday, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having a special meeting in the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center at 6 p.m. And on Tuesday, Service Area Number 1 will be having its board work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Among the things happening during Comfish Week this week, Alaska Sea Grant is hosting a Business of Fishing workshop on Wednesday. That's going on from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Fisherman's Hall. The workshop will cover business planning, tax strategies, and risk management. It's completely free, but they would like you to register in advance, and they will be providing lunch. Visit AlaskaSeaGrant, all one word, .org/events to register yourself, or contact Julie at 907-250-9512 for more information. And also tomorrow, Alaska Sea Grant is partnering with NOAA's Alaska Fisheries Service Center to evaluate vulnerability to ocean climate conditions and community responses here in Kodiak. They will be having a Kodiak-specific workshop from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. tomorrow at the UAF Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center over on Near Island. Coffee, snacks, and lunch will be provided on-site following the discussion, and an honorarium of $200 is available for participants. Contact David Holen, D-H-O-L-E-N, at alaska.edu with any questions. But again, that starts at 10 a.m. over at the UAF Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center on Near Island tomorrow. Or Wednesday. Oh, tomorrow is Wednesday. Okay. Also, the CFEC will be in town for Comfish, and they will be having a specific CFEC meet and greet on Thursday evening at 5 p.m. At Fisherman's Hall. Also, they will have a booth, and they'd like you to stop by to talk about things like new limited fisheries, current status of local fisheries, and other things.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.